lost in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan All-Stars, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist show in the country. Now, here's your All-Star host.
Yes, Alan, Al Green, he did get reelected, so all your impeaching of Donald Trump didn't get the job done. Karen Cataline here, one of your Alan Nathan All-Stars, and good to be with you on this very busy news day. And just in honor and memoriam of Alan Nathan, here is his motto. We want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. Dramatic throat clearing there. We're going to dive right in with our first guest, Josh Haston, award-winning journalist. He's the Middle East correspondent for JNS and the host of the weekly radio program Israel Uncensored and the Land of Israel Radio Network. Josh Haston, thank you for joining us here on Alan Nathan All-Stars.
Thank you for having me.
Well, boy, I want to hear more about Israel Uncensored. Who's censoring Israel? I want to know. And of course, you're here to talk about what is currently going on in Iran. Once again, people are expecting or looking, you know, have our sights on Iran to see whether there's going to be more unrest there in Iran and what Donald Trump will do. So first off, why don't you give a bit about Israel Uncensored, and we'll move on to Iran.
Sure. Israel Uncensored is my weekly podcast in which I take the gloves off and talk about the realities of the situation here in Israel and the Middle East, try to give a perspective that people aren't getting in the mainstream media in the U.S. and other places. So that's my podcast. I also do two video podcasts on JNS TV, one called Jerusalem Minute with my co-host, CEO of JNS, Alex Drayman, and another one called Judeacation, which I host, focusing on the realities of Judea and Samaria, the biblical ancestral heartland of the Jewish people. So those are my programs.
That's great.
Thanks.
How long have you been doing this program? And I have a reason for asking.
Well, so, I mean, I've been in Israel now 24 years. So I've been a journalist all that time through various news outlets. And my, you know, my radio work has evolved over the years. I was doing work with Israel National News. At one point, I was running Jerusalem Post Radio. And most recently, JNS Jewish News Syndicate. So I've been doing this for a long time now, from the great state of Indiana.
How about that? How about that? I guess this is a too general a question, but, you know, as an American Jew living here and watching, most people might not argue with the fact that anti-Semitism, or I just call it Jew hatred, is suddenly socially acceptable in parts that were never really acceptable before. How has your reporting changed? If you want to say just a word or two about that, because it's disturbing and of great concern to Jews all over the world, but especially in America, it was the stalwart I don't think America has turned against Israel and the Jews, but a lot of very noisy people are saying it's perfectly okay to hate on a group of people because of their ethnic or religious leanings. So what do you say about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, anti-Semitism has been around for literally thousands of years. You could just pick up a Bible and read what was going on in ancient Egypt, where the Pharaoh, later actually adopted by Hitler, carried out policies in which first the Jews were, you know, put into ghettos and then slowly, slowly subjugated. And then next thing you know, you had Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass there in Germany. And slowly, slowly, that's how things were 4,000 years ago. And that's where things are today. Mm-hmm. And fast forward till October the 7th, 2023, when the biggest massacre against the Jewish people took place since the Holocaust. And somehow the world turned against Israel, turned not only against Israel, but against the Jews, whether you're in L.A., whether you're in New York, whether you're in Europe. Certainly you saw what happened, the horrible shooting there on Hanukkah in Australia. So, you know, it's nothing new. And it's just ironic that, you know, just as an example, the world claimed, those who turned against the Jews claimed this was about Gaza. This was in support of the Arabs there. And the Jews were doing horrible things, even though this was all self-defense. Yet when thousands and thousands, we'll talk about Iran, thousands of people were massacred by their own government regime, by the Iranian regime, you had no protests at Columbia University. You had nobody wearing pins at the what'd you have yesterday, the Grammys, in support of the people of Iran. Yeah. You're talking about the hypocrisy.
Nothing.
It just
Nothing.
Reeks of hypocrisy. There's no Jews, no news. And that's the way it's been, not only over the last 2 years, but many, many years, unfortunately amplified, as you know, in the United States and in all major cities, really. You know, does the United States turning against the Jews? No. Does Israel and the Jews have many, many friends and allies throughout the United States? Absolutely. But it's getting more and more disturbing. We saw just last week the Chabad house there in Brooklyn, New York.
Yes.
Crazy guy ramming it with his car time and time again. Many, many, many thousands and thousands of incidents. So, but what my message really to the Jews out there is you have to be strong. You have to learn to defend yourself. And really, that's the reality, whether we like it or not.
Well, that's a good place to leave that part of the discussion. I had about five more questions, but it'll have to wait. Why don't you update us as to what's currently going on in Iran, as you see it from your very unique vantage point?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, people have to realize that Iran, who just massacred, I don't know if it's 10,000 or 30,000, if not more, of its own people, is the world's largest supporter of international terrorism. They have the blood of thousands of their own people on their hands, of Israelis, of Americans on their hands. That's who they are. Now we're hearing reports that perhaps there are going to be some sort of negotiations, maybe in Turkey, between the United States and Iran to come to some sort of agreement in regard to Iran's nuclear program. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, it's not going to lead anywhere. Iran is determined to build a nuclear weapon and first target the little Satan, that's what they call Israel, and then the big Satan, the United States. So they could, you know, have all this posturing and pretending and, you know, saying now they're willing to negotiate. I mean, maybe they are somewhat, since President Trump has his armada surrounding Iran here in recent days. Maybe now they realize that the United States means business. I don't know how they forgot that, since the U.S. struck them before, took out their nuclear capabilities. But at the end of the day, Iran cannot possess a nuclear weapon. And in addition, they have these ballistic missiles, perhaps thousands, aimed at the state of Israel, aimed at U.S. bases in the Middle East. And that can't happen. And I think the president understands that.
Yeah. I am hearing from some friends here that because of what's going on in Iran, which doesn't make sense to me, maybe you can clear it up. And of course, in the Middle East news, it's always multi-leveled and nuanced. It's never just black or white. In politics in general, they said that the Abraham Accords have been derailed or delayed right now because of what's going on in Iran. But as I understood it, at least Saudi Arabia was very much in favor of getting rid of Iran's nukes. Could you clear that up a little bit for us?
Yeah, there's no doubt, you know, Saudi Arabia, a direct neighbor there of Iran, you know, the Saudis are in this position where on one hand, they want to remain loyal, at least, you know, publicly to their neighbors, and they don't want any more trouble with the Iranians. They already had the Houthis who were attacking Saudi Arabia for years, just up until recently. So I think they understand, I have no doubt, actually, they understand the reality of the situation. They understand the Iranian nuclear threat. Iran could turn their nuclear weapons towards them. But on the other hand, they have to kind of play this, they have to kind of play this game where they appear that they're, you know, somewhat centrist. They have to appear, you know, say things to the United States like, you know, we don't want you to use Saudi Arabian airspace to attack Iran. So they're kind of in the middle. They're playing both games. Do I think they'll be a member of the Abraham Accords eventually? I do. I think so. I think now is the right time to bring Saudi Arabia into this normalization with Israel. I think it's going to happen. I don't know when, but I think they're headed that way.
Josh Haston, thank you so much for joining us. Where do people find your Israel Uncensored podcast?
Well, the best way, I think, is to go to JNS.org, go to JNS TV on YouTube, and that's where you can find me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Godspeed. Thanks for the great work you're doing. We appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more on Alan Nathan's All-Stars on the Main Street Radio Network.
In a rare moment in entertainment, a blockbuster film release and a major game expansion in the Avatar universe dropping together. It's a crossover that has movie studios and game developers building worlds in tandem. Futurist and innovation leader Matt Marr explains.
Instead of releasing a film and then a game later as a bonus, developers are now designing these worlds together from day one. And we're seeing that play out now with Avatar Frontiers of Pandora from the Ashes. The expansion builds on its base game Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, and players really get to live some of the key experiences from the new film on their own terms. Visually speaking, the game is stunning, lush, bioluminescent greenery, realistic wildlife, many of the features that have positioned the Avatar films among the greats. You can soar on your Banshee, master new Na'vi abilities in combat, and take on story missions that bridges with the film's events. Instead of watching the adventure unfold, you get to participate in it and control your own fate, all while uncovering never-before-seen parts of Pandora.
You can go to Ubisoft.com to learn more about From the Ashes.
Welcome back, everyone, to Alan Nathan's All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, commentator, columnist, all-around rabble-rouser. I maintain a pretty active Twitter page at Karen Cataline. That's spelled K-A-R-E-N. Yes, I'm a Karen and not afraid to admit it. Cataline, K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Just go there to my Twitter page and you'll find that I have things pinned and I come up with these short sentences, which I think are very important. And the one that I'd like to alert you to is the quote, social justice movement that claims to fight bigotry and hate is bigotry and hate. I could go into that in greater detail, but we do have our guest, and we're going to switch gears right now to welcome him back to the program. Co-owner and vice president of JKC Trucking, the largest refrigerating company based out of Chicago. His name is Mike Kucharski. Welcome, Mike, to Alan Nathan's All-Stars. Good to have you along.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me back on your show.
Yeah, yeah. So, boy, trucking and trucking issues. And, of course, I've told you I'm married to a trucker, so I get a little bit of a bird's eye view than the normal city kid, which is what I am, gets. And it is great that you come on talk radio to enlighten people of how important trucking and issues concerning getting products to the market, to the grocery stores and everywhere else. They don't just grow on trees. So given that, it's not surprising that California has new trucking emission standards that they're about to implement. And why are truckers so very much against this?
So the EPA stands as the trucker. So it's really funny because California was the leading engine to go to OEM manufacturers and say, we need to put more stricter DPF systems, are called DPF systems, that stricter emission systems on trucks to not pollute in California. And just to begin with, you know, just to clarify things, obviously you said you're married to a trucker. Diesel emissions are not as bad as gasoline emissions. So it was very questionable that they went to the OEM. OEM, without any questions, just put it on all new trucks moving forward.
And what's OEM? For our listeners, what's OEM?
Excuse me. So when I refer to the OEM, the OEM is the manufacturers of trucks like Kenworth, Peterbilt, the manufacturers that build the trucks. They went to them and the manufacturer, just like Ford or somebody. And
yeah, but what does it stand for? OEM?
OEM? Oh, my gosh.
It's okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. Just so for people who may not know that lingo. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No. So the state of California went there and said, you know, to these manufacturers, we need these and all new trucks moving forward. Even though the California is the only one requested this device, you know, just to give you an idea, here in Illinois, we don't have it. New York, Florida, Texas, only California. So and California started making these rules, pushing this EPA agenda. I mean, how's this? We all support clean air, but when they put these systems in, they, number one, that adds about $40,000 plus to the truck cost. The new systems had a lot of issues, and the biggest problem is when something happens to these systems, there's any kind of failure or something, it puts you in something called the derate mode. So let's say me, you and I are cruising along the highway, and we get derated. We go to 15 miles an hour or 5 miles an hour, depending what manufacturer it is, in the derate mode. So we have to get off the highway. We're going 55, and we have to get off the highway because we got derated to the shoulder, and then we have to struggle along. Let's say we find a shop that will fix us, let's say 2 miles away or 5 miles away. We still have to go 5 miles an hour down the shoulder, which is dangerous, you know, because how does this truck should not be able to derate out of nowhere for something like this. And to we should have the safety that we could get off the road safely, because staying on the shoulder is a hazard. You know, it's a fact that, you know, the longer you stay on the shoulder, the more your percentage goes up to being hit by somebody on accident. And this is the frustration. And we truckers have spent millions and millions of dollars fixing these systems, maintenance of these systems. And we've delayed so much product because we go into derate mode. The truck will leave here, let's say our yard checked, everything's good, and it'll derate, of course, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming, where it's hard to get fixed. And it slows down the supply chain. And what's happening, the EPA's come in and said, hey, look, you have to redo this derate mode, that it has to give the drivers more miles, which I agree. And it blows my mind that they allowed this to just come in to begin with. And it's just a hazard. You know, the Trucking Association hasn't, you know, sued these people saying, look, you just cannot go from full speed to derate mode because it's unsafe. And
right.
Obviously, you know.
Right. Well, you're in
a
different political environment than the many years when we had POTUS 44 and what I consider to be POTUS 44's third term, Otto Penn, the administration before this one, because they were friendly to California intrusions into the trucking industry, unfair and ridiculous intrusions into the trucking industry. Now you have a more friendly EPA in, I think it's Lee Zeldin, the EPA administrator, who's taking to task California, which of course we know there are much greater issues, not greater because transportation is huge, but there's the backstory of the politics that California dares not do anything that isn't oppositional to this president. And they will continue to fight with the president through every industry. And of course, the governor wants to be president, or so he thinks. So how does that affect the truckers when they watch all this? And that and more.
The truckers are upset. The truckers are upset. They're reasonable people. You know, they talk a lot between themselves. there's some few bad apples, but they're upset about this because how's this? When they make a rule, like when truckers travel, we have the federal motor carrier that makes the rules for all the states. And what applies in Illinois should apply in California. And we have these states that, like California, saying, hey, no, follow our rules. No. It should be all the states.
Recalcitrant states, I think, would be the word, right? So you're going through a state. You got to go through a state to get somewhere else that's friendly to truckers. And then you have to abide by unreasonable rules that cost you and everyone else a lot of money. This isn't new, in politics, that people get used as pawns in a much bigger issue that really doesn't affect anything but the politics. I'm wondering, do you feel the need to kind of appease the other side by paying homage to the climate change nuts? There goes the music. Forgive me, I asked you a question and probably don't have time to answer. How can people find you and follow you, Mike Kucharski?
And yeah, they can go on jkctrucking.com, or if you're looking for a career change, you could go on jobs@jkctrucking.com to apply for a job.
That would be great. I know you need good truckers. Thank you so much, Mike. We'll talk to you again. Well, we'll be right back with more on Alan Nathan All-Stars on the Main Street Radio Network.
We're less than a month away from the 2026 Winter Olympic Games in Milan, Cortina. Two-time U.S. national champion and Team USA biathlete Chloe Levins is gearing up for the Games while simultaneously preparing for a career after sports.
I feel like I'm living a dual career where I'm balancing multiple things, working my current part-time jobs, advancing my competitive career, and preparing for my career after sport all at the same time. That last part has historically been the most daunting for elite athletes, but having Guild as a resource for Team USA is an absolute game changer by giving athletes access to hundreds of degree and certificate programs tuition-free. The flexibility of the programs allows us to take classes remotely. Personally, I'm traveling to camps and competitions 5 months out of the year, so the ability to do this on my own schedule was absolutely essential. Guild's partnership with Team USA allows us to work on our future while we're representing the U.S. at the highest level in elite sport.
To learn more about Guild's partnership with Team USA and its athletes, visit guild.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, happy to be one of them. And we have as our next guest a political analyst, columnist with Town Hall, and author of America's Last Chance. He's also host of the award-winning Ringside Politics. Jeff Cruer joins us right now on the Alan Nathan All-Stars. Hi, Jeff. Good to have you along.
Hey. Okay, great to be with you.
Yeah, so you are up on something that anybody who's got a room temperature IQ ought to be concerned about. Conservatives were smeared and mocked for saying that there may have been some fraudulent behavior in the 2020 election, and now all kinds of revelations are coming out about Fulton County, for one. So tell us more about that and what you can report.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of us believe the 2020 election was questionable. We saw the vote count stop. We saw when it picked up again, all these new votes for Joe Biden. We saw what they were doing in Michigan, covering the windows where we couldn't look in. We heard about the water main breaking in Atlanta, supposedly causing a shutdown. Uh-huh. So, I mean, the ballots being delivered by truck, it's just one thing
all filled out and not creased.
Right. And, the people that were making the accusations were treated like trash, treated like idiots, prosecuted. Rudy Giuliani had to you know, pay a massive cost to one of the ladies in Georgia that sued him. I mean, he was really, they really socked it to him as far as the payment that he had to make. So all these things happened, but President Trump kept saying, you know, the election was fraudulent. He seemed very confident in it. Then all of a sudden we see that, you know, we're down in Venezuela. And that's been the claim from many that, you know, Venezuela was involved in these voting machines. And we don't know what kind of information has been gathered. Then we kept hearing that, all right, well, something's going to happen here domestically. Then lo and behold, you had the FBI conducting a search in Fulton County and picking up 2020 election records. That, you know, have been in question all these years. I mean, we're 5.5 years later. So they seized hundreds of boxes of ballots. They seized voter rolls. They seized ballot images and other elections from and other election records from that 2020 election. So obviously the people in Fulton County are defending their work, and now they're planning to file a motion challenging what they say is an improper seizure of the records. So the battle goes on.
Yeah, I know this is doesn't seem like much of a question, but if they're so certain that nothing is out of order and nothing is questionable, why are they so desperate to hold on to those ballots and claim that they were improperly seized? Wouldn't they be jumping to have people look at them to prove their innocence?
I think that is a very good point. And there was an interview with one of the commissioners who said that, you know, they've been fighting all these years to make sure that they were not released. They spent millions of dollars, is what she said, to make sure that these materials were not divulged. So I think they're obviously hiding something. And, you know, we all saw video of what was going on there with the ballot counting, you know, the questionable boxes. The
running
questions is whether
ballots,
some of these ballots
through machines numerous
were
times.
Run 5 times, right?
Yeah.
And every time people would mention it, oh, you're crazy. It was, you know, the safest election ever. Nothing to see here. Move on. You just won't accept the will of the people. I know Georgia, and I know that Georgia is not a liberal state. And I've always questioned the so-called victory of Joe Biden there. I mean, we're supposed to believe Joe Biden got 81 million votes in 2020, 12 million more than Barack Obama. And he didn't even campaign, if you remember correctly. I mean,
he was in his basement.
Right.
And most people, even the Democrats, though they lied about it, knew that he was in mid to late stages of dementia. It was as obvious as the only people to whom it wasn't obvious were people who were in dementia, you know, who didn't know that. I would also add, you were almost, you're nicer than I would be. The thing that was most suspicious to people who didn't delve as deeply as you just did was not that people were called crazy for asking. They were vilified for asking.
Right.
They were told they were un-American for asking, and that it threatens the democracy, which is as preposterous as possible, because in a non-democracy, you don't get to question. And yet they proceeded to question the election of Donald Trump. How transparent is that really? Quite.
Well, that's what they do to shut down debate and discussion and investigation. Say, you know, you're challenging our democratic system. You're trying to, you know, overthrow a valid election. Yeah. And just the opposite happened, really. I mean, it was not a valid election, in my opinion. There were too many problems with it. Remember, that was in the period after, you know, during the midst of COVID, and they had all kind of procedures in place where you had massive mail-in balloting. I don't trust mail-in balloting. I don't trust, you know, these machines. I don't trust these officials in some of these states that were in charge. Unfortunately, valid lawsuits were thrown out because they claimed that the people didn't have standing. No court would seem to want to look at this like they should have. Supreme Court didn't. Nobody did. And then, of course, Joe Biden gets in there and implements 4 years of absolute horror on the American people. And it is, by the grace of God, a miracle that Donald Trump got elected again and is in there now trying to clean up the mess.
Yeah, and they're just still fighting tooth and nail and, in fact, being pretty un-American about it by starting, you know, paid rioting in places to fight law-abiding citizens. It's you know, eventually there is a what's the word? You build fact upon fact upon fact, and you begin to wonder how anybody could believe the same entity that gets caught in lie after lie. I let me ask you this, Jeff. And by the way, could you stay for one more segment?
Yeah, sure.
That would be great, because there's a lot more to discuss here, and I would love to have you. The people
Definitely.
Who've been watching this for so long, you know, Rush Limbaugh used to say, call it the drive-by media. And what he was so cogent in pointing out is that you can make these outrageous claims, and by the time people get around to proving them wrong, you've succeeded in doing what you set out to do. And I think that there is a level of frustration here that it is so difficult to hold people accountable, and that's why they get away with it. Because if it's taken us 5.5 years to even begin to unravel this ball of yarn, well, the damage was already done. And then, of course, the left says, oh, forget it. It's water under the bridge.
Right.
Well, if we don't have a method for holding people accountable for election fraud in a timely fashion, then they get away with election fraud. So could you speak to that a little
bit? Well, I would say that's a real problem. I mean, I can go back to Benghazi. Nobody was held accountable for that. Fast and Furious, no one was held accountable for that. The targeting of the Tea Party groups by the IRS, no one was held accountable for that. How about the Russian collusion nonsense? No, who was held accountable for that? No one. The rioting during the summer 2020, when people were burning down cities, no one was
taking
really
over six blocks of a city and claiming that wasn't insurrection, but January 6th was. I mean, it's one
and
insult to your intelligence after another.
And then for January 6th, they throw grandma in prison. They throw pastors in prison, people that just walked into the place. So they went overboard on that, and they let all these other things go. So that's why we say there's not really a single standard of justice.
See why we need you for another segment?
Right.
Let's pick it up there when we get back. We're talking to Jeff Cruer, political analyst, columnist with Town Hall, author of America's Last Chance. We'll be right back on the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline on the Main Street Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Steve Radke, president of the Northwestern Mutual Foundation. Every day around the world, over 1,000 children are diagnosed with cancer. At Northwestern Mutual, we've been trying to find better treatments and cures for those cancers, but we also know that a diagnosis can have an incredible emotional and financial impact on an entire family. In fact, studies show that 60% of families lose household income as a result of a cancer diagnosis. So when you couple that with the rising cost of education, this prompted us to create our Childhood Cancer Scholarship Program. Our Childhood Cancer Scholarship Program, now in its 8th year, works by providing college scholarships to those who are affected by childhood cancer, either survivors themselves or siblings of survivors. To date, we provided over 370 scholarships, totaling more than $3 million to help alleviate some of that financial strain. For more, visit the Northwestern Mutual Foundation website, nmfoundation.com, and we're accepting applications until February.
Well, Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, and we are in the midst of talking with Jeff Cruere, political analyst, columnist with Town Hall, author of America's Last Chance, and host of the award-winning Ringside Politics. You know, since we're always a little rushed at the end of an interview, even when we've had somebody on two separate segments, talk about your book, and then we'll get back to Fulton County, America's Last Chance. When did you write that? And do you think we're getting an extra chance now? Or how do you view that? Because I can tell you, I surely did not think that it was a done deal that Trump could win, especially in light of the amount of corruption that we all watched in 2020.
Exactly. And that's why, I mean, my contention was that the election of Donald Trump was the last chance for America. So I wrote that at the first election of Trump when he was running in 2016. It was right in election season in 2016. And my contention was that if we're going to follow 8 years of Barack Obama with 4 more years of Hillary Clinton, we're done for. So I believe that it was America's last chance. Thank God Donald Trump was elected. Unfortunately, they stole the election from him in 2020. And we had the 4 years of Obama supercharged under, you know, the puppet Biden.
Right.
And just to look back, 12 out of the last 16 years were run by, you know, radical Democrats. So in Trump's first term, as we discussed, they pretty much investigated him, impeached him, tried to derail him every way they could. It was, you know, one roadblock after another, COVID, the riots, the election, everything was thrown at him. And then, of course, in the interim, I mean, he faces assassination attempts, he faces lawfare, he faces mugshots and raids, and they try to throw him in prison for decades, and they try to bankrupt him. And by a miracle, I mean, he gets reelected. So here we are. And I think he has made it a real commitment to try to get to the bottom of what happened in 2020. And now we're seeing some action. So many times we don't see action from the DOJ. So many things, as we discussed earlier, just sort of left without being resolved. But in this case now we see some action. Some records have been seized. So we're going to see where it goes. I found it very interesting that Tulsi Gabbard was there as these elections were being seized by FBI officials. And she, of course, is the director of national intelligence, who has already made public statements about her belief that the machines are corruptible. And it seems like election integrity is an issue that she's really focused on. So I was glad to see her there.
Well, I think there are a lot of people, I can't speak for everybody, but I know a lot of people that are unbelievably pessimistic because they're so used to things never being resolved,
right,
and there never being any accountability because you just laid it all out for us. How optimistic are you that this is actually going to lead to some people being held truly accountable? The very people that lectured us incessantly that no one is above the law, except them, of course.
Right. Well, I'm cautiously optimistic that this will lead to something. I'm hoping that, you know, we're going to see some action because we've got midterms coming up. And I don't believe that our elections are secured. We've got to see action by Congress. There are two pieces of legislation we should all get behind, the SAVE Act and the Save America Act, which involves election integrity. And we need to see these Republicans that have a majority deliver and get these measures implemented, because if the Democrats take back control, I mean, forget it. It's impossible at that point.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that we're going to see some developments in this FBI action, and, you know, hopeful that maybe Congress will do something if we can get enough pressure on them to act, because time's running out. The midterm's getting closer.
Yeah, we know why grassroots conservatives are so pessimistic, because in Trump's first term, we watched the do-nothing Republicans who appeared to be enabling the Democrats, or because they themselves were. And we had to paint them into a corner in order to see just how corrupt they were. They said, well, we can't do anything because we don't have the House. So they gave them the House. No, we can't do anything because we don't have the Senate. We can't do anything because we don't have the executive branch. What did they do? They turned against Trump, many of them. And it was clear that they had clear sailing, but they still wouldn't do anything. So I hope that I'm wrong, because I don't immediately think nothing will happen, but I'm not too optimistic.
And for good reason, and you just laid it out. I mean, in the first term, we had 2 years of Republican control, and they passed a tax cut, but they wouldn't get rid of Obamacare. Remember what John McCain did? Thumbs down.
Yes.
And we're still saddled with a disaster called Obamacare, and now we've had
Obama for he was supposed to have fixed it all, right? It was all, let me clarify this in a couple minutes. I won't say that I'm fully pessimistic, because anybody who watched the 2024 election realizes that there really is a God. And we were given another chance.
Right.
And it's clear that Trump is racing against time to fix some of these things in the face of vicious, vicious double standards. They really don't care about honesty or integrity or fairness in any way, shape, or form. Let me ask you real, real quick. Are you at all aware of the case of Tina Peters?
Yes, I am. And it has saddened me to no end that this woman, who has tried to fight for election integrity and in her, sorry to say, corrupt state of Colorado, was targeted. And she's been abused in prison. And the president can't pardon her because of their state charges.
It's unbelievable.
It's outrageous.
Yeah. So we have a case of an actual political prisoner who was held to supposedly account for something the Secretary of State actually did. So that's another right that really needs to be corrected. Thank you so much, Jeff Cruere, not only for the work that you're doing, but for giving us a second segment. And this is something we'll just keep on watching, praying, crossing our fingers and toes that something, the truth comes out and people are held accountable. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back at the top of the hour with another hour of the Alan Nathan All-Stars.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.